I'm calling to order this hearing of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Welcome, everyone. It's an exciting day. We're going to walk through, not walk through, but mark up our bill today. And as you all know, we did a walkthrough. We've taken testimony. So today we will be doing markup and voting without public testimony. So the first thing is that I'm going to move that House File 2930 be, it's back before the committee, and I'm going to move that it be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And then I'm going to move the DE amendment. So let's see, is that the right title of the DE? It's the DE1 amendment to bring that before the committee. And so what we will do then is I'm going to move the A10 author's amendment to the DE1. And all of you have probably seen that's a fairly large amendment, and it makes changes also to the spreadsheet. So I first am going to ask Mr. Harney to walk through the changes to the spreadsheet that are based upon what is in or cause changes to what is in the A10 author's amendment. Mr. Harney.
Madam Chair, members should have in their packets a spreadsheet on the top right-hand corner titled House File 2930 DE as amended by AAXX, with a timestamp of March 29th, 2023 at 2:36 p.m. If that looks good, I'll proceed. Okay, I have 11 changes I'm gonna run through here and hopefully do it relatively quickly. Starting on page 3 of the spreadsheet, there is a change to a governor's proposal for information technology service delivery transformation in the author's amendment that effectively provides base funding for the department in fiscal years 26 and 27.
Line
106.
Thank you.
On line 137 is a change in the underlying DE to provide funding for the homeless management information system that is provided at the governor's requested amount. Then I'm going to flip to the next page on page 4, line 179. There was a governor's proposal improving the applicant and enrollee experience for MA and Minnesota Care that was added in the author's amendment. That amount was added at a lesser amount than requested by the governor. The total amount in the House position is $11,700,000 in 2024-25. And approximately $6,700,000 in the tails. Flipping to page 8, line 333 is a governor's proposal for providing licensing for provider licensing and resource reporting hub. Excuse me. That amount is included in the House position at the governor's requested level for funding. Flipping to page 9 is just a technical change in the financing for the Healthcare Access Fund and medical assistance. Flipping to, line 386. Flipping to page 12, line 495. In the author's amendment, there is additional TAILS funding provided for the governor's proposal for additional funding for mobile crisis grants. That amount in the tails for the House position is $10,572,000. Flipping to page 17, on line 688 is a Representative Keeler proposal. This proposal carries only the rates impact to MA in the tails for House File 2267. On line 694 is an Edelson proposal included in the author's amendment. A portion of House File 1706 provides one-time funding for volunteer engagement funds. On line 698, House File 346, the MA rate bridge is removed in the author's amendment and the costs are not accounted for in the House position. On line 712, House File 1814, dental home pilot, that cost is removed from the author's amendment and is not carried in the House position. There's a new item on line 717, return to CCBHC demonstration, providing the general fund savings in the House position of $25,991,000 in 2425 and $8,248,000 in savings in the tails. That concludes it for page 17. I am going to flip then to page 19. Line 780 is governor's proposal for grants to promote local planning for climate resiliency. The author's amendment provides $500,000 each fiscal year, one time in the upcoming biennium for three FTEs at the Department of Health. That concludes changes on page 19. On page 20, lines 843 and 848 are changes. 843 reduces the amount in the House position for Healthy Beginnings, Healthy Families grant program. And line 848 provides one-time funding in the upcoming biennium to continue the operation of the governor's proposal for the MN Help Me Connect initiative. That concludes changes on page 20. Flipping to page 24, there on line 1015, there is a reduction in the House position for the total cost for the Ryer bill for the universal health care systems analysis. The amount carried in the House position now is $4,193,000 in the upcoming biennium. Next on page 25, line 1068, removes the savings carried in Representative Liebling's bill, House File 91. As was previously noted, this was double counted with the governor's initiative. So this removes the savings tracked. And then lastly, on page 26, line 1092, is a Representative Smith proposal for a psychedelic medicine task force. There's funding provided in the House position in the author's amendment for $400,000 one time in the upcoming biennium. And Madam Chair, that concludes the walkthrough of the changes in the spreadsheet.
All right, thank you, Mr. Harney. So next we will walk through the actual author's amendment. And so just for those who haven't been through this process before, this is always happens. These are big, complicated bills. There's always an author's amendment to both, you know, fix things that were left out, take out things that need to come out in order to rebalance the spreadsheet and make everything work, and also a lot of technical changes. So we don't have a summary of this document, so I'm going to just ask our House research analyst to walk through in kind of a high-level fashion what the author's amendment is doing, just so everyone understands what's in there. Mr. Chun.
Okay. So, Madam Chair and members, we'll be switching from analyst to analyst depending upon what article's being amended. So I'll start by going over the changes to Articles 1 and 2, again, at sort of a high level. Lines 1.3 to 1.17 of the amendment, this is the revised language for the governor's proposal that would remove authority for DHS to recover overpayments from clients. Then lines 1.18 to 3.33 of the amendment, this is a change in how in the criteria for Hennepin County Medical Center. And this change is necessary to allow Hennepin County Medical Center to continue to receive disproportionate share hospital payments. Lines 4.1 to 4.2, this is clarification requiring that payment for long-acting reversible contraceptives be consistent with MA payments for outpatient drugs. Then there's some effective date changes, 4.3 to 4.4, this is the effective date for tobacco and nicotine cessation services. Lines 4.5 to 4.8, this is new language. It states that MA covers gender-affirming services, and this kind of updates statutes to reflect some court decisions. Lines 4.9 to 4.10 are technical. Lines 4.11 to 4.14, this is the effective date, changing the effective date for children's hospice services. Line 4.15, this is just a conforming change. Lines 4.16 to 4.20 and 4.22 to 4.24 are technical. These are effective date changes to match tracking, also some revisor edits. Line 4.21, this removes the dental home pilot project from the bill. Then lines 4.25 to 5.17, these move the managed care pharmacy reimbursement provision to the correct location in statute. And it does make a change to conformant tracking. It requires managed care plans to pay one half of the fee for service dispensing fee. Then lines 5.18 to 5.20, lines 5.23 to 5.24 are technical. And then lines 5.21 to 5.22, this is clarification that undocumented persons eligible under Minnesota care may still receive emergency medical assistance.
Madam Chair and members, continuing with the changes to Article 3, lines 5.25 to 5.28 of the amendment remove language authorizing the Commissioner of Health to enforce the No Surprises Act and classifying data related to enforcement. Lines 5.29 to 8.3 of the amendment, this is the text of House File 293, requiring current standard charges for medical and dental practices, but it does not include the requirement that the Commissioner of Health must make available a price comparison tool. Lines 8.4 to 10.28 deletes the governor's language modifying lead testing and remediation requirements for schools, and it replaces it with the language from House File 347, which is Representative Howard's bill. Lines 10.30 to 11.2 modify the Drug Overdose and Morbidity Prevention Act to remove language authorizing the commissioner to collect data and classifying that data.
Madam Chair, what was those lines again, please?
Ms. Clark, please.
Madam Chair and Representative Backer, that was 10.30 to 11.2.
Thank you.
Lines 11.3 to 11.9 replace the term nurse practitioner with advanced practice registered nurse in the Employee Recruitment Education Loan Forgiveness Program. Lines 11.10 to 11.12 are technical. Line 11.13 is a change requested by the Health Department, deleting language establishing a new home visiting program for priority populations. Lines 11.14 to 11.15 add the Minnesota Commission of the Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing to the entities that the commissioner consults with in the RFP process for the Advancing Health Equity Grants. Lines 11.16 to 12.11 add the section on climate resiliency. Lines 12.12 to 13.9 add the section on Help Me Connect. Line 13.10 deletes language in the long COVID section requiring the commissioner to provide information on treatment as part of the program. Lines 13.11 to 15.28 is the psychedelic medicine task force language. The next set of changes are changes to Article 5, the health licensing boards. Lines 15.26. Oh, I think this is wrong. Sorry. Okay, it's right. 15.26 to 15.30 corrects an amendment to the acupuncture statutes to allow a student to continue to practice without a license as long as the student practices under supervision.
And if I could interrupt there just for a second, just so people know, this was it's a correction to a bill that we are carrying that comes from the Board of Medical Practice.
And lines 15.31 to 16.31 are additions to this article requested by DHS to conform with a section allowing a former alcohol and drug counselor student to practice for 90 days after graduation.
Okay. Madam Chair and members, I will start with the changes to Article 6, Background Studies. And this starts on line 17.1 of the amendment. Line 17.1 deletes a section changing the data classification for certain background study information. And there are various sections also deleted that relate to that change throughout this this article. The next set of changes down to line 17.19 are DHS suggested technical changes. Line 17.20 to 17.23 delete sections related to the data section deleted in section 1. The next set of changes are revisor and DHS technical changes down to the end of page 17. Turning to page 18, this adds the next several additions in the amendment add sections to the behavioral health article, and these are no-cost changes to streamline Certified Community Behavioral Health Clinic or CCBHC regulations. This is extensive language, and it goes all the way until page 28, line 27, which also relates to CCBHCs, but this is the next two sections that are added relate to the item on the spreadsheet that Mr. Harney went over for DHS to re-enter the federal demonstration program for the CCBHCs.
Ms. Thunderman, the first piece that you mentioned, all of this language, that was in the original bill and was taken out because there was concern about that it was cost, and then it was found that it is no cost. Am I right?
Yes, Madam Chair, members, a similar version of this was in the original bill. There was some question over whether it had cost or not, but we were told it did not have cost. It's policy only. This aspect of the streamlining package did not have cost, so that's why it is back in. So moving to line 29.26, again, this is related to the re-entry for CCBHCs into the demonstration. lines 30.14 to 30.19, again, with the CCBHC streamlining. Line 30.20, this deletes a section. This was a request from DHS to delete a section that changed sort of community treatment eligibility requirements. Mm-hmm. The next change at 30.21 was a DHS technical change. Line 30.24 is also related to the CCBHC streamlining, and that's changing, making some corresponding changes in the section in the medical assistance statutes on CCBHCs. Moving to page 34, line 4 of the amendment, these are all, again, DHS. This is to the DHS operations policy article now. These are technical changes from DHS and the revisor, and again, removing, I believe, two data provisions in Chapter 13 and a corresponding change in the background studies statutes. And with that, I believe I will hand it over to Ms. Pinelli.
All right, Ms. Pinelli.
Madam Chair, the next set of changes starting on page 34, line 26, and going through page 36, line 11, make changes to Articles 10 and 11, the Economic Assistance and Housing Support Articles. There are some special effective dates added to a few sections that were requested by the Department of Human Services. There is language added related to the census income governor's proposal that matches the spreadsheet, and then there's also a section added related to housing stabilization services also to match the spreadsheet.
And Madam Chair, members, starting on page 36, line 12, This reinserts a licensing article, and this language is numerous sections, and this relates to the DHS Licensing and Reporting Hub initiative that is now being funded, as Mr. Harney pointed out on the spreadsheet. I believe that goes all the way to line 56.8 of the amendment. Actually, I think that takes us all the way to the end of the language amendments, and then the following amendments are all to the appropriations article that make it line up with the spreadsheet changes. I believe that concludes the author's amendment.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. And as everyone can see, it's no small thing just even to put together the author's amendment. So any questions on the author's amendment? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the spreadsheet, page 8, lines 33 or 332 and 333, between the governors and the House, there's a discrepancy in the totals. For 24, it's 1,000 more. For 25, it's 1,000 more. The combination of the two is 2,000. 26, it's 1,000 more. And then for the 26, 27, it's 1,000 more. But when I look at the subcomponents, all of those numbers are the same between the governors and the House. And I'm trying to understand, is it a calculation error? Or are there minor changes in your amendment so that the there's a several thousand dollars more in the House? I'm just, it sort of flashed at me when I glanced through.
Good eyes, Representative Quam. Mr. Harney.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, that's probably a rounding error. I would have to look at the actual live sheet to tell you why it's different, but it doesn't reflect the material difference from the governor's initiative.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, when we do find out, what the errors were, can we have an updated spreadsheet? Because I really haven't had a chance to more than glance at this, and there might be some additional ones. Thank you.
Mr. Harney?
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. What I understood from the answer, Representative Quam, was that there probably wouldn't need to be an update. It's just probably a rounding error, but I don't know. And we'll, if there's a change, we absolutely will let you know.
Thank you.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking through these changes, and I'm wondering if you can give us a bill number for the changes on lines 4.6 to 4.8.
Are we in? We're in the bill now, right?
In the author's amendment.
Amendment, yeah.
In the A-10.
Madam Chair, Representative Brindley, that is new language brought forward by the department.
Okay, so it's not.
It's to, I guess, conform what's in statute with a court case from some years back.
Thank you.
Representative Brindley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we have not heard that yet. And my other question is on page 11, line 1.17 to, it looks like, line 0.11. Same question. Do we have a House file on that one? I don't remember hearing that.
Representative Brindley, this was part of the governor's budget.
Okay, so we never heard that.
We didn't hear it separately, as we didn't hear many things separately. It was in a bill that was before this committee, however.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other questions from members? All right, seeing none, so I will call the question on the author's amendment. So all in favor of adoption of the author's amendment, the A-10, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So now we will move to other amendments that have been brought forward to the committee. And the first one we'll take up is the A-5, Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the A-5 amendment makes a change to a program called the Metro Demo It's a housing program, a supportive housing services for people in, currently in four metro counties, Anoka, Dakota, Hennepin, and Ramsey. This bill adds Carver, Scott, and Washington County to the program so that the resources that are available, which is up to 226 supportive housing units, are available for the seven-county area instead of the four-county area. There are no costs associated with this. Right. Thank you.
And Representative Ryer is moving the A5 amendment. So any discussion to the A5? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A5 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Oh, opposed? Motion prevails. I'm sorry, did I miss some, did I miss a question, Representative Nadeau? I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, make a noise if you if I don't see you, because I can't see you from where I'm sitting. All right. And the next one we will take up is the A11 amendment. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A11. This is simply a technical amendment from the department, just adding rate language to align with the fiscal note.
Okay. Is there any discussion to the A11 amendment? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A11 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. We will now go to the A19 amendment. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move adoption of the A19 amendment. This is an amendment to the a bill that Representative Quam carried when we were doing the agency policy bills. And in that bill, they were changing the dentist licensed under Chapter 150A on line 1.19. And instead of doing that, we are maintaining the dentist and adding a new participant at line point 1.20 and 1.21, an allied dental personnel, as you know, as defined by rule. And so this is, rather than taking out the one person, is adding another.
All right. Thank you, Representative Breyer. Representative Quam, did you want to speak to that?
Madam Chair, my understanding is that the Senate already made this change and will be conforming language.
Okay. Thank you so much. Is there any discussion to the A19? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A19, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Moving on to the A20 amendment, Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A20 amendment. This is related to rebasing dental rates for Medicaid. As you'll recall, in 2021, we passed a rate increase for dental rates, but the rate structure was still based on 1989 actual dental costs. This brings us into the present with a budget-neutral rebasing of the current budget to reflect dental practice. All of the other changes are simply cleanup. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them.
Mr. Harney.
Madam Chair, to the A20 amendment, on lines 3.22, beginning January 1st, 2028 is where the rebasing occurs. I would have to confirm if this is a budget rules, but definitely custom and usage would require me to clarify in the spreadsheet that there are costs not carried, as this would impact the deep tails. And so that would be a change that would be made to the spreadsheet.
Okay, so just so everyone understands, and I know we've, Representative Ryer and I have discussed this, and so there's no guarantee that this piece survives, but the piece that we are, the no-cost piece, which is just doing the rebasing with current money, is the main part here, and then we'll have to see what happens with the other part. Right. Okay. Other questions or discussion to this amendment? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of the A20, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No. No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. To the A21, Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the A20 amendment. 21, I'm sorry. This is basically technical changes based on TA from the Department of Health to the wording of the Healthcare Affordability Commission language. There's really not much to say about the wording changes unless there are questions.
All right.
Madam
Thank
Chair,
you.
There's also a technical edit that's needed to this amendment.
Okay.
On page 1, line 13, it should be to delete commissioner and insert commission.
Okay. So Representative Ryer is going to incorporate that change. So on line 1.13, the amendment, the word commissioner becomes the word commission. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chen.
Okay. Any other discussion to the amendment? All right. Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Next amendment we'll take up is the A22 amendment. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A22 amendment reflects the work of the Mental Health Legislative Network. It is policy language that includes a total of 5 different bills that have been heard in other committee stops. It reflects the diligent and thoughtful work of over 40 organizations to address the mental health crisis and build a more coordinated system. These bills do a number of things. It helps address the boarding issue we have in the ER. It helps make sure that we are being more efficient with our resources by addressing the PRTF sleeping hour staffing. It helps allow for more impactful use of dollars in the CMIG program, allows youth adults to serve as family peer specialists to broaden eligibility for access to family peer specialists. It addresses allowing culturally specific providers to be included in delivering school-linked behavioral health. It allows the use of some different diagnostic assessment tools for children under the age of 6. Adds a certified family peer specialist to aftercare supports for children transitioning from qualified residential treatment programs. It does some addressing of coding in medical assistance to deliver earlier intervention services. Adds clarity to technical corrections to loan forgiveness so that if you're working on your 4,000 hours under supervision, you can apply for a loan forgiveness program. It also does a lot of streamlining on regulations. This is pick up 2 years ago. We had the start of the uniform standards in the behavioral health area. The first rollout was 2 years ago. There's a large section addressing a lot of streamlining of things in what we call phase 2 of this. It's a large section of law, and this all has Peace in the Valley work on it. And then to kind of hit a little bit where some of these things are located in the bills and the actual amendment, in the amendment itself, lines 1.1 through 2.9, these are adjusting the Health Professional Education Loan Forgiveness Program. This comes from House File 1436, which was the Bang Bill. Approximately line 2.10 to 6.12 is regulation streamlining. That's from House File 2553. That's my bill that was addressing the streamlining. Then from line 6.13 through 7.8, this is integrating the transition to the community initiative. This language comes from House File 1198, which is a Representative Hansen bill. Then from line 7.10 to 7.23, this adds requirements to add youth peers support specialist programs and training support in certification. This is also from House File 1198. Then from 724 to 810, this addresses certification adjustments to include youth peer specialist training and certification. Once again, House File 1198. Then lines 8.11 to 17.28, this is all regulation streamlining. This is from iHouse File 2553. Then from line 17.29 to 18.5, this is psychiatric residential treatment facility sleeping hours adjustment. This is from House File 1683, which is a Bierman bill. Then from 18.6 to 22.23. This is, again, more regulation streamlining from my House File 2553. Then from lines 22.24 to 23.18 is addressing aftercare services, another provision from House File 1198, Representative Hansen. 23.20 to 23.28 is direction to the commissioner. International classification of diseases made available. This is again from House File 1198, Representative Hansen bill. And then from 23.29 to 24.3 is where the provision for the CMIG grant allowable uses shows up. And this is from House File 2058.
All right. Thank you, Representative Fisher. Just one question for you. Everyone, we've heard the term CMIG here quite a bit this morning, and I don't know that I wouldn't expect everybody to know what that was. Do you happen to have the actual term, not the acronym, in front of you?
I cannot remember the actual term right off the top of my head. I apologize for that.
Cultural and Ethnic Minority Infrastructure Grants.
Okay. Thank you. I think that term is probably more commonly understood in the Human Services Committee than here, I'm sure. Okay, other questions or discussion to the amendment? All right, not seeing any. So with that, Representative Fisher has moved the A22 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Fisher. We will now go to the A13 amendment. Is that Representative Nadeau, or who is offering the A13?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Representative Nadeau.
We are on a roll, and hopefully this one will be just as easy. Can I just start out saying it's technical in nature?
You can say that. Do you want to move the amendment?
I believe in him. I believe.
Do you want to move the amendment?
I will move the A13.
Okay, the A13 has been moved. Please explain your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. So this is a fairly simple amendment, members. It's basically applying the prompt payment statutes to the state in fee for service. Currently, there's a prompt payment requirement that MCOs have in managed care, and in the opt-out portion of the bill. I'm just applying 62Q.75 to the state so that they ensure that our providers are paid promptly. What's kind of prompted this for me is on page 4 of the fiscal note, and everything that I'm going to talk about basically is on page 4 of the fiscal note, and I promise to try to be super quick. If we start there, and I worry I have a lot of concerns with this part of the bill, but I'm trying to make sure that we protect our providers if we move to fee for service, and that's what this amendment is truly all about. So in page 4 and 5 of the fiscal note, it really talks about payment lags. It talks about shifts. And if my understanding is correct, the department, the DHS, actually uses those payment shifts at the end of the biennium to balance their budget. So MCOs are required to pay within 30 days of their providers, and we all support that. DHS, in balancing their budget going from biennium to biennium, don't necessarily pay as promptly. And so What I'm worried about, number one, is the bill might be out of balance. Number one, if we're not booking those, and number two, if we are, then some of our providers might not be paid in time. So that's the issue with this particular section of the bill that I'm trying to clean up and protect.
All right, thank you, Representative Nadeau. So. We, I think, all share the concern about making sure that providers are paid promptly. And so I appreciate your, I think, sincere effort on this. I think that the amendment clearly comes from a helpful place. However, I think as it is right now, it's not workable. For one thing, as I understand from the department, and I could have them come down and explain, but it throws the bill out of balance because of the fee, I guess, the penalties for not paying promptly. but also the department is governed, the fee-for-service is also governed by federal law. It's not as though there are no standards that apply to it. And I don't know either that there's any evidence that fee-for-service is any slower other than what you just described, and we could have them come and speak to that. But please, what we have heard is that the MCOs are often very, very late in paying providers, notwithstanding the requirements that they have. And so it's hard to legislate perfection, but I think they also already have rules that govern fee-for-service. But you know what? I could ask, I don't know who at DHS would be the best to come down and speak to this. I see there's some conversation going on there about who gets the short straw. But Representative Quam.
Madam Chair, I think the LAC or such an entity might look at ways of improving this type of an issue, so that if it's not part of this bill, going forward, a few of us that are part of that could try and implement it, and we could maybe coordinate with the chairs.
Yeah, so what I would say, sure, we can, and we can have Mr. Burdick is coming, I guess, to discuss this, and Mr. Greenman, but what I would say is that, let's let them respond first, and then I'll make a comment. Mr. Burdick?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Matt Burdick with the Department of Human Services. And maybe just to provide some context, as the Chair mentioned, DHS under federal law has requirements about timely payment of claims. We have to pay, I believe it is, 90% of all quote-unquote clean claims within 30 days, and then 99% within 90 days. And we do our best to stick to those timelines. We have not heard a great deal of complaints from providers about the fee-for-service system and our timeliness of payment. So we'd be happy to take concerns if we are hearing those.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in the third paragraph on page 5 of the fiscal note, I mean, it specifically says FFS is assumed to have two-month billing lags. So is that, I mean, I know that it's clean, I mean, I'm clean claims are fine. You know, what I'm asking for is, will there be a lag in those clean claims at the end of the bienniums, like I have heard that happens to MCOs?
Mr. Greenman?
Madam Chair, Representative.
And you might want to introduce yourself for the record.
Sorry, Madam Chair. My name is Dave Greenman. I'm the CFO with DHS. DHS forecasts on a cash basis, which means that we forecast based on what we paid out when, and so there is a 2 month lag, but we assume that in the forecast, so there would not be an impact on the forecast of because of the fact that we pay, you know, there's a short lag. I think there's some confusion with the payments to managed care organizations in state law. There are some delays in payments to managed care organizations. Those are established in law, and we pay those as we're supposed to in law. So there are some payments that are made near the end of a fiscal year, sometimes get actually paid into the next fiscal year. But those are actually incorporated into the forecast, and there's no impact on the forecast for that. It's already included in.
Thank you.
Representative Nadeau.
So I can be comfortable in knowing that if we actually go to fee for service, that providers are not going to have to deal with these significant lags if they have fee for service clients.
Mr. Burdick or Mr. Greenman?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think we're still, as Mr. Burdick mentioned, we're still under the same requirements for paying claims as we have in the past, and we'll continue to do so.
Okay. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just trying to wrap my head around all of this as well. So the shift is accounted for in the forecast. Is it accounted for in a fiscal note for this language in the bill? I have not seen it accounted for in a fiscal note. I'm not sure who would be appropriate to answer that.
I mean, if I'm reading the amendment correctly, it's relating specifically to fee-for-service claims. And so I believe we are compliant already in paying these claims, so under fee-for-service. So I'm not sure what the impact would be
Madam Chair.
Well, and Representative New Brindley, we are discussing the amendment. Representative New Brindley.
Correct, but of course it relates to how the amendment alters the underlying bill. I mean, so it does matter if we have taken that shift into account in the fiscal note. And I'm wondering if maybe nonpartisan staff knows if that has been accounted for in the fiscal note.
Well, that would be a Mr. Harney question.
you look as perplexed by it as I am.
a little sleep deprived, Representative Brindley. I would have to look at the fiscal note. I don't have the fiscal note in front of me.
Okay.
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And directly to the amendment, so, and as Representative Nadeau was pointing out, there's an assumption that there will be a two-month billing lag. However, we're being told that bill payments are made within the 30-day period. If those payments are not made within the 30 days, are they subject to the same penalties that MCOs are subject to in making those provider payments?
Mr. Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. No, we do not have penalties that are subject to the department. The department is not an HMO or an MCO, and so we have different ways that we are held to that. I think one important nuance of the delay that is accounted for is providers actually have 12 months from the date of service to submit their claims. And so some of that is factored in, as Mr. Greenman talked about, in sort of the aggregate fiscal analysis. So just wanted to, hopefully that's helpful in terms of how that math has worked out on the spreadsheet.
Madam Chair.
Okay. Well, one more, and then I've got two more members. Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is frankly, a really good amendment, and it feels like a no-brainer, especially when the department is telling us that they pay within the 30 days. It seems like a no-brainer to require prompt payment and to protect our providers to have the same payment requirements as our MCOs have. And I would just say I get a little bit frustrated when we're told, no, it's okay, we do it correctly. But frankly, I don't remember if it was in this committee or if it was in the Human Services Committee when we were given the Human Services presentation, but they had a slide that said, we make mistakes. And they just get to make mistakes, but nobody else does. And they should be, if the government, if the Department of Human Services is going to take on this service, then they should be held accountable the same way everyone else is. And this is a no-brainer amendment to help protect providers in this bill.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And CFO made the statement, we're following the current law. And frankly, the amendment is meant to change current law. My concern is similar to Representative Andrew Grinley. Sorry about that. The thought is, with so many of the facilities having very tight finances, cash flow is a huge impact at times. And it's not uncommon to have a line of credit to make sure that they, can still maintain the cash flow, but then that adds cost and burden. And if we're going to increase the portionality of activity by the departments, we need to make sure that we improve the statutes to better protect our providers on that cash flow issue. And if there is no repercussion, oftentimes in the real world or the government bureaucratic world, there doesn't seem to be as much holding to the intent. So I'd like having some sort of a repercussion because I want our hospitals and clinics and providers in the state to stay open. And so I support the intent of this amendment, and I think we could adopt it, and then if we need to tweak it, we could do that in the floor discussion. Thank you.
Representative Nadeau.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And the reason that this is coming up is I was going to ask Mr. Harney later, and I'm not asking him now, but, you know, we're booking some savings in this thing, but there's a 65% increase in the estimate for enrollment into fee-for-service. That's my concern. And I don't know what the capacity of DHS is. I work for the county. Our involvement with DHS is pretty significant. It's sometimes hard to get responses, and I do understand that providers have up to a year to bill. Most counties have changed that because it's impossible to budget. So I don't know how you can budget from year to year if you don't know, if you haven't even received you still have a year of invoices to pay. So that's part of why I'm bringing this, is I want there to be far more transparency in, you know, this is billions of dollars that we're talking about. And if 10% of this population moves, I mean, you're talking hundreds of millions. And so that's my concern, is not just protecting the providers, but also ensuring that DHS can appropriately and make sure that they can come back to the legislature and say, you know what, this is how we're budgeting these things. And, oh, by the way, we might have a year of a 65% enrollment that we haven't paid yet. And that's really frightening to me, Madam Chair. That's my amendment. It's really, I hope that it's acceptable to people. I think it'll bring more transparency. So thank you.
Representative Backer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you, members. Wow, I think this is a great amendment. It's really simple. The departments need to work in the real world. In the real world, there are bills, and bills have to be paid, and our providers are struggling. I represent several critical access hospitals in greater Minnesota since I've been here, and not one of them have said, man, the department, and I hate to say this, but I'm sharing you the truth. You need to know the truth. That the department is easy to work with. Folks, we sit on this committee to provide better health care. This is what this amendment does. If our providers don't get care, when the Metro folks come out in greater Minnesota, there will not be hospitals. They are running on a shoestring. What's happening with this bill right now is what's happening with nursing homes. That's a whole different discussion on what the majority is doing to our nursing homes. This is a reasonable amendment. Providers need to know what's coming in. You can't run a hospital out of thin air. You can't have hospitals do pancake feeds like I do for our nursing homes. It won't work. And I'm just being straightforward. I go to these emergencies room and so forth at 2 in the morning, and I'm helping because they're low staff. This does nothing to improve. This amendment does help. I'm now talking to the bill. Excuse me, Madam Chair. But this is a great amendment because it allows the provider to know that they're going to get paid so they can cash flow. Because if they don't cash flow, there's no health care. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a couple really hopefully quick questions to maybe quickly ground us. So I will tell you that I do know that billing is very complicated. Back in the early days of my career, I worked in the medical records department at the University of Minnesota, and we sat right next to the coders who handled all the billing, and I know it's frequently challenging to get that done, and mistakes get made. But that said, you spoke a little bit about that you have an SLA on average of 30 days in order to turn a claim around, and that the vast majority of those claims, as long as they're clean, get paid within that 30-day period. But you said for a clean claim, and I'm not sure if everyone is clear what a clean claim is. So for my first question, could you briefly explain what that means?
Okay, you know, Representative Bonner, we're a little bit off the amendment here, I think, but if you can give a really brief answer to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative, and I'm by no means an expert in this matter, so if we need to go more, we can follow up with our policy experts. But in essence, it's a claim that doesn't have any errors and that meets all of the billing rules for the service that is being provided and is covered under the Medicaid program. And that's the vast majority of the bills that folks submit. When there are challenges and for some reason the system finds an error, that's where there's more time so that the provider gets the correct payment and the department is paying for the service in a proper way. But for the majority of, you know, claims that we see, they come in that way and we pay timely.
Representative.
Thank you. And that's, I guess, exactly where I was headed. So, in other words, if they do not get, they are not a clean claim and they don't get handled within the first 30 days, that generally means that there may be some mismatch in the coding or billing, that it's not accurate, right? And we talk a lot in this committee about it, making sure that we are billing properly, that we are paying properly, that there is no fraud, waste, or abuse, and all of those kinds of things, right? And so I think we want to make sure that we're paying the right amount. So if the claim isn't clean, I think we want to have the time to allow DHS to work with their folks to make sure that they actually are accurate, right? So, and you said 90 days is the SLA by the federal government for cleaning those errors up?
Mr. Burdick?
Excuse me, Madam Chair. No, that 90-day threshold is for 99% of the claims. So there are two different thresholds that the state is held to by the federal government.
All right.
Thank you for the clarification.
Right. Thank you, Representative Bonner. So I'm going to close this out and just say I'm going to recommend a no vote. You know, I think the concern about prompt payment is a good one. It's one we should work on. And when members do want to actually work on an issue, and, you know, I'm always for that. And I think we can work with the department. We can work with, you know, we can talk about how to actually tweak processes or discuss in order to make sure that this would work. But right now what this amendment really does is take a statute that doesn't apply to DHS payments, to fee-for-service payments, and make it apply. And that just, so the amendment is not appropriate. And I just would say, you know, this allegation that somehow government is allowed to make mistakes but nobody else does, that's just not clearly not the case. I mean, we just see that's not the case. So all in favor of adoption.
Madam Chair, I would request a roll call.
I'm sorry. I'm calling for the vote. Are we all right? We'll have a roll call. The clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes no.
Chair Lubling, no.
No.
Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Bierman, no. Lead Schumacher.
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Akam.
Akam, no.
Akam, no. Representative Backer.
Aye.
Backer, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner, no. Representative Carroll.
No.
Carroll, no. Representative Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, no.
Fisher, no. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
No.
Hemmingson-Yeager, no. Representative Herr.
No.
Herr, no. Representative Peel. Excuse. Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nadeau.
Aye.
Nadeau, aye. Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley, aye. Representative Perryman.
Aye.
Perryman, aye. Representative Quam.
Yes.
Quam, aye. Representative Ryer.
No.
Ryer, no. Representative Smith.
Smith, no.
Smith, no. 7 ayes and 11 nays.
There being 7 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. And just for the future, once I start to call for the vote, you can't then ask for a roll call. So if you want one, ask for it earlier. So now we will take up the A23. Does someone want to move the A23?
Madam Chair, I'd move the A23 amendment.
All right, Representative New Brindley to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We heard it, boy, it was a long time ago now. The right to have a support person with you when receiving health care. And we worked on an amendment at that time. We offered an amendment to that to ensure that it didn't just apply to pregnant persons, but to everyone, that everyone should have a support person. And at that time, there were reasonable questions about the workability of that amendment. And so we've done some work to make sure that that it is more comprehensive. So this amendment would ensure that not just pregnant persons, but everyone has a right to a support person with them when they are receiving care. This is a much more, I mean, you'll remember, and I guess the language in the bill for a pregnant person is very short language. It's very simple. There aren't any, there's not much for parameters around it. This is much more extensive language to ensure that everyone has a right to a support person, that providers have to have written policies and procedures that are posted so folks know what those are. And it also recognizes that there needs to be some protections for providers. So, for example, things like a support person is not automatically allowed into an operating room or other areas of the hospital that might be sensitive, and it wouldn't be appropriate to have additional folks with them in those settings. It also provides some protections for providers and facilities in this to ensure that they can both protect patients and protect themselves. And I would ask for a yes vote. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, discussion to the A23. Okay. All right, well, I would ask members for a no vote. I think, you know, again, there's some seed of something valuable in the amendment, but the amendment itself is really quite unacceptable for a couple of reasons, just even a couple that I could point out. I mean, this could be something we could discuss for a very long time because, honestly, it needs a lot of vetting. The idea needs a lot of vetting. But there's something in here I would point out on page line 2.31 that this essentially would prohibit, what is this a term that's used in the bill, licensed healthcare facilities would prohibit providers from requiring vaccinations for visitors. I don't think we're ready to go there to ban them from doing that. The other thing is that one of the other problems with this is that it has this liability section, which would send the bill to judiciary. That's even problematic, you know, off the top of my head, looking at that liability provision. So you're allowing people to sue providers for, or you're banning them from suing providers for certain things, but I suppose it's still allowed to sue a provider then for not giving access to somebody. And, of course, then on the back, it was notable to me that they can keep somebody out if the support person is determined to be a danger to the patient or in cases of suspected abuse. I mean, I can just imagine the lawsuits that would come from that when somebody is excluded ostensibly for being a danger to the patient. The person says, no, I'm not. I'm going to sue you now for keeping me out. I mean, it just has all kinds of problems. It would have to go to the Judiciary Committee. So I'm going to ask members for a no vote on this. And actually, I'm going to call for a roll call on this because I think it's a ridiculously unworkable in its current form. And so I think we should all make a very clear, on the record, no vote on this amendment. So the clerk will take the roll. Oh, I'm sorry, you wanted to speak to it again? I thought there weren't any other comments, Representative New Brindley. And the last comment is from the author of the bill, as you know. So
thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you for your comments on that. I appreciate that. I know that, you know, this is based on House File 666, which was introduced quite a while ago. And I know that the bill author did indeed request a hearing so that we could have had that conversation. But I would note, unfortunately, it never got a hearing, so we were never able to have that conversation. We were never able to send the bill to judiciary and vet that language because certainly I almost always think almost no bill that comes before us is perfect, and almost any bill probably needs to be tweaked. And I am certainly open to doing that, but this bill never got a hearing, even though a hearing was requested. And I'm not sure that I saw a single bill in this entire omnibus bill that was introduced by a Republican. And so I guess I shouldn't be surprised that the bill didn't get a hearing. But to say that it needs conversation and it needs vetting, I agree. And I hope that in the future the chair chooses to hear those Republican bills that deserve that vetting.
So, Representative Brindley, you're actually wrong that there aren't any Republican bills in here. And there aren't a lot, I do admit that, but I have to tell you, though, if a member actually came to me to talk about their bill, I have absolutely no problem hearing Republican bills, but some of the stuff I saw introduced, it was just a non-starter. So it's, you know, it's true that there lots of bills get introduced, not all of them get a hearing from either side. There were, I don't know how many thousands of bills introduced this session. It's probably another record, and they just can't all be heard. So the clerk will take the roll on the bill.
Chair Liebling.
No, on the amendment, sorry.
Liebling, no. Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman, no.
Bierman, no. Lead Schumacher.
Aye.
Schumacher, aye. Representative Akam.
Akam, no.
Akam, no. Representative Backer.
Backer, aye.
Backer, aye. Representative Bonner.
No.
Bonner, no. Representative Carroll.
No.
Carroll, no. Representative Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, no.
Fisher, no. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
No.
Hemmingson-Yeager, no. Representative Herr.
No.
Herr, no. Representative Keel, excused. Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, aye. Representative Nadeau.
Yes.
Nadeau, aye. Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley, aye. Representative Perryman.
Aye.
Perryman, aye. Representative Quam.
See.
Quam, aye. Representative Ryer.
No.
Ryer, no. Representative Smith.
No.
Smith, no. 7 ayes and 11 nays.
There being 7 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. And we have the A24. Who is offering the A24? Representative Schumacher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll offer the A24 amendment. This amendment just adds some reporting to the 911 system funds that are going to be included in this bill for the use and availability of those funds. And really the thought behind it is that since this is going to be a new fee that's added to phone lines across the state for everyone that I've ever met has a telephone, and those fees will be added to that, just to have some reporting back for us so that we know what kind of amounts are being collected, the balance of the fund, what the administrative expenses of the funds are, and the forecasting revenue for that, and would ask for members' support in this effort.
All right. Is there any discussion to the A24? All right. So, Representative Schumacher, this is another one that I appreciate the thought behind it, and I think you're not wrong to want this, and I do think we should do something like this, but I'm not sure that the amendment itself is quite ready. I guess I could ask the department if they can comment on that, because I'm not sure if you worked with them, or maybe you could comment on that, Representative Schumacher. Did you work with the department to see if this would be in a form that they could do it?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Didn't have the chance to clear this with the department ahead of time. It was tight timelines.
Yeah, I understand. Is there anybody from DHS who could?
MDH.
Or I'm sorry, is this MDH? MDH, that's right, MDH. Is anyone from MDH here that could speak to this? Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name.
Madam Chair, Mark Kindy, Minnesota Department of Health, and pleased to answer the question.
Okay, if you could pull your mic up a little bit there, we're not picking you up very well. Okay, and
thank you so
what
much.
Was your name again? I'm sorry.
Mark Kindy, K-I-N-D-E,
okay.
Epidemiologist, Minnesota Department of Health.
All right, thank you. Are you able to, I don't know if you've had a chance to review this amendment and the A24 amendment, have you had a chance to review that and tell us whether this would be something that would be workable?
Madam Chair, I've not reviewed that wording. We came ready to think about the 988 discussion, but we, as framed, it's workable, and fits into being accountable and transparent.
Okay, and All right. Welcome to the committee.
My colleague who really knows.
Yeah. Right. Sure. To the expert. Welcome.
Hi. Shara Kimmerer, Legislative Budget Manager with the Department of Health. Reviewing the amendment, it requires, I think the wording where it says biennial budget, that is biennial budget time is typically when you create a proposal. In the lines 1.6 through 1.8, all of the funding information, so the collection of the fees, fee collection, that is all going to be in MMB's fund statement already. So they collect all of the consolidated fund statement. All of the information that's in those lines will all be in MMB's fund statement, and we could get, balances for each of those things and reports that we currently do now.
So, Ms. Kimber, am I hearing you say that you think that the amendment is acceptable and could be workable for the department?
Well, I think it's already required in statute, in MMB's statute, in terms of collecting the fees and understanding where it's deposited. It's already in the special revenue fund. So for anything that ends up being adopted as a fee, that will all be in statute, and the revenue fund will have a fund statement balance for each of those.
Okay, so I hear you saying that you think it's duplicative, in other words. What about the waiver language, subdivision 7?
Madam Chair, Mark Kinvey. We did read the waiver language, and if the department thinks that it could work without that, but if the chair and representatives want the waiver language there, we can make that work.
Okay, so, all right. So maybe then what we'll do is, Representative Schumacher, I would be willing to adopt or recommend that the committee adopt this language, kind of with the proviso that if we find out that there's some, as the department continues to look at it, if it turns out to be unworkable, that we may need to remove it later. But I appreciate it. I do think, even if it's duplicative, I think what you would be asking for here is having the having MDH kind of bring that forward, consolidate it, bring it forward so we can all be more aware of it, because we don't tend to go and read all of MMB's reports, right?
Speak for yourself, Madam.
Much as, all right. Well, point taken, Representative Schumacher. I bet you do read them. Yes. Okay, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I usually do pretty good at understanding reports, and the duplicative nature of this is only that you're going to have a report with some of the data that's already maybe somewhere else, and it might be easier to understand. And I think at times that's useful, because I do know some of the existing reports, people use it instead of sleeping aids to nod off. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Quam. And then, so I'm going to then recommend that we adopt this, kind of with the proviso that it may have to come out later if it doesn't work. But with that, so all in favor of adoption of the 824 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So with that, we are now back on the DE1 amendment as amended. Discussion to the DE1 amendment as amended. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wonder if this question would be for Mr. Harney. Sorry. but I'm still looking at the fiscal note on the impacts of the different language in the bill related to managed care organizations. And I was looking at the same part, but I'm focusing on, on page 5 of the fiscal note for House File 816, page 5, about two-thirds of the way down, currently MCOs are required to pay these taxes, the 1% premium tax plus the 0.6% health maintenance organization surcharge. And it says that the state will lose revenue from the premium tax, but I'm wondering where that is quantified. I'm not seeing where that is quantified anywhere. And maybe I've just missed it.
Madam Chair, Representative Brindley, my answer comes with a caveat that I do not have the fiscal in front of me.
Okay.
I if the revenue impact that you're discussing is not carried on the fiscal note, it's not carried on the fiscal note. So I would invite the department down if they want to clarify further, but that my understanding would be that if it's not carried on the fiscal note, it's not carried.
Madam Chair.
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just ask then if we could ask that of the department.
Okay. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Hello, Anna Ashby with the Department of Human Services, Chair Liebling, Representative New Brindley. The Department of Revenue would need to quantify the collection of premiums. DHS does not collect that premium revenue.
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my concern is there's a lot of this going on this particular item, and I just want to know that it's accounted for somewhere, because it seems that this would make this out of balance. So I don't know if this is accounted for in revenue, but it doesn't show up anywhere in the fiscal notes. So I don't know where that fiscal impact is being accounted for. And I know we sit on another committee. I'm very concerned about the long-term impacts of what we're doing. We're spending $18 billion of surplus. We are spending all of the money in the tails, and we are setting ourselves up for a very, very dangerous situation in the future, without accounting for everything that is perhaps going to be impacted by the laws that we are passing. And I would just add, this is relatively short notice. We still don't have fiscal notes on all the items included in the DE amendment. And so I'm trying to piece things together from other fiscal notes that might apply, because we still don't have fiscal notes on those things, but we're passing an omnibus bill out of committee without knowing the fiscal impact of everything we are doing in this bill. And particularly on this managed care stuff, we don't know all these impacts. I did not prepare an amendment today because I was hoping maybe for some more answers on this kind of stuff. But there are real concerns with the fiscal impact of where we are going. Aside from that, I will just say on this DE amendment now, on the bill as amended, frankly, I view this largely as dangerous policy. You know, we heard lots of these bills throughout session, and as we heard individual bills, there were certainly concerns. But you put all of these bills together, and the concerns grow, frankly, to a little bit of panic. It is hard to look at this DE and not view this as an attempt to completely dismantle and destroy healthcare in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, prior to Obamacare being implemented, the state of Minnesota actually had a very low number of uninsured people and a high level of care. And Obamacare really threw that out of balance, and we have never recovered. We have never recovered as a state and taken that place again as a state with that level of care. And it is hard to look at this bill and see it as anything other than an attempt to destroy healthcare as we know it.
Representative New Brindley, I think you've crossed the line into impugning motives here when you're talking about it's an attempt to. So please confine your, please try to observe that rule if you can.
So there are a number of provisions that that lead me to this conclusion. And frankly, the biggest concern, perhaps, is that we are doing all of this without understanding the actual fiscal impact. We do not have fiscal notes on provisions in this bill, this very expensive bill. And yet we're gonna plow forward. We're gonna plow forward. I don't know, maybe we'll have this information by the time this bill comes to the floor. I hope we do. We've been told throughout session, fiscal notes are coming. Don't worry, these bills will come back in an omnibus bill. We'll be able to see all of this impact. Well, here we are, passing our omnibus bill out of committee, and we still don't have the fiscal impact. And so when we hear things like on this prompt payment that somehow that would throw the bill out of whack, that feels a little comical that would be the argument, when really the department is telling us they pay within 30 days. So I'm not sure how that throws the bill out of whack. They already make those payments within 30 days. That's what they testified. And the only other thing I will say on that, you know, I just want to be very clear. When I say the department makes mistakes, those are not my words. I did not make that up. That came directly from the department's PowerPoint slide. Those are not my words. Those are their words. I will just add to that the department gets to make mistakes without accountability. The rest of the real world doesn't get to do that. There are consequences for mistakes. And I would also add that, you know, we've heard a lot today. Well, will that work for the department? Will that work for the department? How, you know, can they do that? Well, frankly, it's our job as legislators to decide what they should do. That is our job. As one of the three branches of government, that is literally our job. And it is the job of the departments. It's the job of the executive to execute what we ask them to do. So to suggest that somehow there are things that we shouldn't do because the department doesn't want us to do them, well, maybe that should give us a keen look, that should be a clue to us to take a closer look at what's happening there. We should care about this. This is our job as the legislative branch. It is not our job as the legislative branch, I mean, I should pull up the bill list, to present an executive branch bill. That is not our job. And yet that is largely what we are doing. This is a terrible bill, and I assume that everyone will be voting no on it.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have one question for Mr. Harney, I think, and then I've got a couple more things. Mr. Harney, is in the spreadsheet, are we tracking the impacts to the Healthcare Access Fund when managed care is excluded from Minnesota care? Is that tracked anywhere?
Mr. Harney?
Madam Chair, Representative Nadeau, don't think it's tracked anywhere. No, I'd have to get back to you on your question.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. You know, members.
Representative Nadeau.
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. And, you know, my concern is, I mean, I think we've talked, I think Representative New Brindley talked about the fear, I guess, we have, and I alluded to it a little bit in my prompt payment amendment. So I'm not going to go down that path. I do want to point out that as people move, as we anticipate over 100,000 people moving from managed care to fee-for-service, you know, coordination of care is not provided through fee-for-service. We spend an enormous amount of time at the county with county-based purchasing, managed care organizations. They spend, I mean, they are held to a standard. And that standard includes, you know, improving quality of care. It includes reducing costs, addressing racial disparities. They do everything from providing transportation to interpretive services, and the list goes on and on and on. And they're held to a performance standard, and there's a deduct if they don't meet those. They're also held to the standards of making sure that we're reducing ED visits, making sure that vaccinations and appointments are kept. Those are things that aren't provided under fee for service. And in the fiscal note, it talks about, you know, we're booking some savings with the people that we believe are gonna move over to fee for service. And I just feel that savings is gonna be exponentially higher when we try to coordinate those services merely by having the state act as a payer with providers. I think the trade-off is massive, and I might be wrong, and I'm happy to have those conversations further, but it is very frightening to me that we've spent decades following evidence-based practices that we know coordinating care improves patient outcomes, improves client outcomes. It puts people on a ladder to success. We provide them with supportive services. We spend, I mean, this bill right here, we're spending enormous amounts of money, and I think rightly, to provide culturally specific coordinated care models. And maybe I'm wrong, but I am very afraid that it's not going to improve outcomes for the people that we're supposed to be serving. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Backer.
Yes, Madam Chair. Two questions, first of all, and I believe these will be to the author of the bill, Madam Chair. Why was hospital rebasing not included in this proposal?
Representative Backer, because we just couldn't afford everything we wanted to do. I mean, you know, if I had we have a rather restricted tails target, as you know, and when you rebase rates, and there are a lot of rates we're not able to have in the bill, rate increases, because it creates big tails. And so just for fiscal reasons, we have quite a bin in here that we think helps hospitals. And by the way, there's a lot for EMTs in here as well. I hope you noticed that.
I did notice that, ma'am. We included
all the bills that we heard that were requested in that big hearing we had, with the one exception of the that new rate methodology that just couldn't be worked out in time. So there's a lot in here for hospitals, but unfortunately we weren't able to afford that too.
Yeah, and thank you. I mean, my concern is, of course, that MCO rates are far better than fee for service base, and I have concerns about that. Let me ask my second question, then I'll make my statement. Can you explain the changes, Madam Chair, you made to the Born Alive Infant Protection Act in this bill?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Representative Backer. So I put a provision in that simply I just call it comfort language. You know, there's been a lot of misinformation spread about the repeal of the Born Alive. And I think I explained this actually when House File 91 was before this committee and other committees, that obviously in Minnesota law, an infant that is born and is alive is a person and is entitled to care just like any other person born alive. So it's comfort language. It simply, I would say, states the obvious, that we're not allowing, you know, all the allegations from the anti-abortion people that, you know, we're killing infants and all this ridiculous and really offensive stuff that's been said is just simply false. And that little piece of language is just comfort language that restates the obvious, that infants who are born who are alive are entitled to every care, the same care as anybody else, under medical standards that exist and that that medical professionals are held to. So that's all that is doing.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. And I don't have the report in front of me, so I'm going completely up from memory. But I did look at the report. I believe it was from DHS from 2021 to, was for year 2021, and I looked at the language. It talked about five infants that were born alive, and the language in that from the department said comfort care, and that concerns me, Madam Chair. As you know, I'm an EMT. I cannot provide comfort care to my patients, and I had a birth, infant birth, back a year and a half ago at 3 a.m. Saturday morning that, first of all, I'm morally obligated, and I will do it, but I was legally obligated to provide every respiratory care to make sure that infant lived. That infant was no bigger than my hand, and I did. But when I read the report from the department, comfort care is not emergency care for those five infants. And that's what concerns me, Madam Chair. I know you care about people. I know you do. This concerns me, too. I'm called to provide that care. And though in those situations, I wasn't there, but if all I have to do is look, read the language. And comfort care is not life-saving care. And that concerns me, Madam Chair. So I do appreciate you answering this bill, answering that question. So I want to get that on the record. My biggest, I have a lot of concerns on this bill. You already heard me. I'll try not to be as energetic in my last speech because I want to be respectful. But I, let's see, we have Breckenridge Hospital. I never get to Elba Lake, but it's in my district. But the hospitals that I get to as a EMT would be Graceville, Ortonville, and Wheaton are my three most popular here in Minnesota. And those are three, I believe we have 76 care critical access hospitals. And with no rebasing money, the public option for Minnesota Care and eliminating the 340B savings accounts, I have great concerns. Right now, 50% of our critical access hospitals are in the red folks. And that greatly concerns me and should concern all of us here. We want health care. I know, Madam Chair, you want health care. I know everybody at this table. That's why we serve on such a fun committee. Not always, of course, but such an important committee. And when you have 56% of the hospitals are running on negative, and I'm not talking about the big ones right now. My focus, I serve a greater Minnesota district. You know, everybody has heard me, hump, bump, tip, elbow, nose, way out west. I have a great concern. I'm already 25 to 30 minutes when someone calls me to pick them up in an ambulance. I'm already there. If Wheaton can't survive, if Graceville can't survive, I'm going to Morris. That's 45 minutes one way. I'm going to Breckenridge. That's 60 minutes away. That's if they don't, we know they're not running in slush funds. So I'm really concerned about how this affects the hospital. And from my perspective, it will continue to affect them negatively. And I haven't even addressed the nursing aspect of this because how we staff hospitals in greater Minnesota is not the same that we do in the metro and so forth. So I'm sincerely, I do not volunteer sometimes 400 hours a month as an EMT that I have to go another 20 to 30 miles. And I'm not a person who do, most people who know me, I'm a very optimistic person. But this concerns me, Madam Chair, and I do appreciate you allowing me to share that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Backer. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, looking over the A10 and the changing of some of the effective dates and correlating it to the spreadsheet, I'm trying to understand on the first page of the spreadsheet, 34 through 40, between the on year 24, between the governors and the houses, there's a $20 million delta
and the savings. And I'm trying to understand, because this is our things for MA by eligible category and all the categories there. What assumptions or changes are creating a $20 million delta, which is basically the magnitude of the annual? I mean, that's a huge proportionality.
Mr. Harney.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, what lines 34 through 40 are showing you is on the spreadsheet the BACT and sub columns next to fund and description. What that is rolling up is the coding below for the difference in the governor's and the House positions between the rate changes in MA that are occurring. So it's just a difference between both positions of the House and the governor.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Which, you know, for 24, it's the House's version is over $20 million less, and then in 2025, it's over $8 million more. I'm trying to really understand. I mean, there's got to be some major differences in the assumptions, or what are we doing? Because magnitude-wise, that's a huge change, and I'm trying to understand, because that's also during the period of a million and a half reauthorizations and et cetera going through, and it's not clicking. And so I assume that there's some assumption because I'm just trying to comprehend what could have caused this.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Harney.
It is not a difference in assumptions, Representative Quam. It is a difference in positions in the bill for the provisions that are provided. So when the House has a different position or a different provision, the amount that's getting rolled up here is going to be materially different than the governor if the governor does not carry the same position or provision in the bill.
Is that pretty clear, Representative?
Right. And to Madam Chair, in 24, so the House is saving over $20 million compared to what the governor is doing. And then 2025, the House is spending over $8 million more, maybe offline.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And just so members know, I mean, we do need to get done here. Otherwise, we'll have to come back tonight or tomorrow. So, you know, we have floor at 12:30. So just so everyone is aware. All right. So I think that is the end. I just will make one comment before we vote on the adoption of the DE1 as amended. You know, just a couple of quick responses here. And one is there is language in this bill on 340B to try to keep organizations whole. I mean, there's some work that has to be done to understand how much organizations are getting through that program. The other thing, I would just make a quick comment on the rebasing. You know, the rebasing that was requested by the hospitals, it's not either we're doing rebasing or we're not. We are doing rebasing. It's already in the forecast. What the request was from the hospitals was to move that up and so add more to that. So it's not as though hospitals are not getting increases. They are. With that, Representative Schumacher, I will give you a final word on this, and then before we vote on the DE1, Representative Schumacher.
Really appreciate that, Madam Chair, and just want to thank the members who had highlighted some of the concerns that we have today, and I'll leave it at that. I'll save more of my remarks for Ways and Means, where we get to discuss this again, but really just wanted to ask for a roll call here. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Schumacher. So there will be a roll call. And I am renewing my motion to adopt the DE1 amendment as amended. So, clerk, I take the roll.
Chair Liebling.
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Vice Chair Bierman.
Bierman, aye.
Bierman, aye. Lead Schumacher.
No.
Schumacher, no. Representative Akam.
Aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Backer.
No.
Backer, no. Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Representative Carroll.
Aye.
Carroll, aye. Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Fisher.
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Hemmingson Yeager.
Aye.
Hemmingson Yeager, aye. Representative Herr.
Aye.
Herr, aye. Representative Keel. Excused. Representative Murphy.
No.
Murphy, no. Representative Nadeau.
No.
Nadeau, no. Representative New Brindley.
No.
New Brindley, no. Representative Perryman.
No.
Perryman, no. Representative Quam.
No.
Quam, no. Representative Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. Representative Smith.
Smith, aye.
Smith, aye. 11 ayes and 7 nays.
There being 11 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and the DE1 as amended is adopted. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2930 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Smith?
I just wanted to say, because there have been a lot said, this is a great bill. There's some amazing stuff that is in here. We make sure that MA eligibility for children continues from what we saw recently. MinCare and MA generally medical assistance is easier and more expansive, including things like dental, long-term contraceptives. A Medicare buy-in for undocumented Minnesotans, individuals who are currently probably not going in for regular checkups and care and are going to emergency rooms and costing the state a lot of money, purely from a dollar and cents, it makes sense. But even more importantly, from a human perspective, it makes sense that our fellow Minnesotans all have access to health care. We're making a suicide health line that will save lives. We are addressing the health care workforce safety as well as the need for more to return to that workforce and making it attractive for those people to go back to that workforce. And something I am incredibly excited about, Rep. Ryer's bill for a universal healthcare analysis, because in my personal opinion, that's how we do make this healthcare most equitable and accessible for everyone. So this is a wonderful bill. Very excited to vote for it. And positives going forward for Minnesota. Thank you, Chair, for the work and member committees.
Thank you. I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2930, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to Ways and Means. So we will be meeting on Monday to take up a couple of bills, so we don't need to do any speeches today. We'll do our speeches on Monday if we have time for speeches. All right. Thank you, everyone. We stand adjourned.
Thank you.